Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this, the final episode of Talking the Blues for the 2025-26 season. Before I introduce George and Andy, can I ask you not to try and adjust your speech, your sound settings, sorry. The bass is because I have got some form of head cold or whatever. Andy and George will come through crystal clear. They both assured me. and I think their thinking is crystal clear as well. Gosh, what a good link that was. George and Andy, hello. How are you both?
I sound better than you do, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, you went to the game yesterday, I was.
Well, I don't envy you having gone to that game yesterday, Paul. I really don't.
Tell us about the match, Paul, because it's a different thing when you're there, isn't it?
True.
It's a bit of a rinse and repeat of many of the more recent away performances, to be honest. It's odd. I was flicking through some of the past episodes of Talking the Blues the other night because I was awake and had nothing else to do. And there's one episode, I think it was in January, when we were talking about I'd written about it, saying how magnificent our away performance had been so far this season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're still well in the top half of the league in terms of away performances. But the away performances of recent weeks, mirrored by the home performances for much of the season, of course, just ask so many questions about the club, about the players, and particularly about the manager, I'm sorry to say, where there's, I mean, there is an obvious answer, excuse me, which is like throw the baby out with the bathwater, which I don't think the club are going to do. But from my perspective, it just seems like the modern game has caught up with us. And
no, it's passed us by. Yeah.
And is, you know, waving at us through the rear view mirror. It can't be the case that Sunderland, Bournemouth, Brighton, Crystal Palace, teams that in normal circumstances we would consider ourselves to be superior to, for a whole raft of reasons, history obviously being one, but resources certainly being the case. It cannot be a coincidence that these teams have now comfortably overtaken us, are getting to a position where they are possibly expecting now to qualify for European football. And in the case of Crystal Palace, you know, it might be three trophies in 3 years. And yet, we're no closer to winning a trophy, no closer to sustainably qualifying for Europe. Than we were possibly even under Sean Dyche. And it's so frustrating and it's so sad to see. I think, you know, I'm going to qualify my comments about David Moyes with, I am grateful for what he did when he came into the club after Dyche. You know, he stabilised us and he made sure that relegation was not really ever going to be a serious consideration. When it was up to the point where Dyche left and Moyes came in. And for perhaps half of the season, maybe even two-thirds of this season, even if we could argue about the style of football and his approach to games, you know, we were comfortably in that group of teams, most of whom I've just mentioned, who could reasonably anticipate, you know, at worst, the Europa Conference League next season. Yeah, we've fallen away. And, you know, if one considers the circumstances of yesterday, and I look at, say, for example, the most comparable set of circumstances that Everton found themselves in, the Bournemouth game, whereby we had to win to ensure safety, and Tottenham were ostensibly in the same position, they could not have had an easier game yesterday. And they didn't play well, and they didn't present much of a threat.
No.
And there wasn't the same atmosphere at Tottenham than there was at Goodison. For the Bournemouth game. It didn't feel like the massively intense occasion that you might have thought it might have been. Yet we, I'm not going to say we were lambs to the slaughter, but we were lambs. We just turned up and were the most perfunctionary
We were the
Everton
ideal
team.
opposition for Tottenham on the day. They couldn't have wished for a better fixture.
Well, I think we got to the point, Andy, as the season has gone on, and certainly the last third of the season, whereas everybody must look to see when they're next playing Everton,
Yeah.
because we don't present any threat at all. We're never going to surprise anybody tactically. We're not an athletic team, a fast team that's going to outperform clubs physically, and we're not even a team whereby if things aren't going right for us, there's a plan B, or we've got a number of players on the bench that can radically change a game. We've seen in recent weeks the game has changed a little bit, especially when George has come on. Excuse me. But that's not enough. So you're right. We've become wholly uncompetitive. And the question that for me is this truly representative of where we are as a club? And I fear the answer to that is yes. Or is it just that we've just hit a bad patch at the wrong
No.
time, and the
No.
manager's not been able to pull us out of it? Please throw in your thoughts.
The situation we're in has been endemic within the club for far more years than any of us care to remember. We've taken mediocrity to be the norm, and regrettably, we've accepted it. There hasn't been the level of disquiet, shall we say, from the fan base that perhaps there should have been. I can think of other clubs whose fan bases would have gone absolutely ballistic. We haven't. We've been, and I'm not blaming the fan base, don't get me wrong. But unfortunately,
This is exhausted, Andy.
pardon?
The fan base is exhausted.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We've been worn down. It's been put to us subliminally that to be mid-table is acceptable, and it isn't. It's not acceptable for anybody to be mid-table. Every single club in every single division should be striving to be number one, whether they've got the acumen and the skill levels. And the fitness levels and the wherewithal to get to number one is neither here nor there. That should be the goal, to be number one. Number two is not number one. Number 13 is a million miles from being number one and more. It's light years away. And Paul, you used the word frustration. And yesterday in the post-match, Mr. Moyes was asked, did he understand the frustration of the fans? And he said, no. Well, he
Did
must
he
be where.
really?
Pardon?
Did he really? I watched a post-match. I remember that
Yeah,
bit.
he
All
was.
right.
He was actually asked by Joe Thomas of the Echo,
Okay.
did he understand the frustration of the fans? And he said, no. And
Right.
I'm thinking, this guy isn't wearing blinkers. He's got a sleeping mask on. If he can stand there on the touchline week after week, watching the dross that we've watched, particularly since we tonked Chelsea, and think that everything is hunky-dory, then he's out of his tiny mind and he should be out of his job. I'm sorry, I'm coming right off the fence here. If the club do not say to him, thank you, goodbye, then they're crazy. They're utterly crazy. He's not going to take us anywhere. You talked about, Paul, you said about the changes on the bench when we brought Tyreek George on, and he's shown a little bit. With the best will in the world, what can he do in 10 minutes? We brought Harrison Armstrong on and things looked immeasurably better. We've no idea what Tyler Dibbling can do. We've no idea what the lads from Germany, Asnu, can do. Because we haven't seen him. It's. I mean, we spent all summer chase, all last summer chasing Tyler Dibling, and spent what was it, 40 million on him, and he's had 360 minutes in 42 league games, and you know, it's just insane. We keep doing the same thing over and over. Allegedly, after the Sunderland game, where we were embarrassed in our final home game by a team who were then below us and have now leapfrogged over us, oh, and have qualified for the Europa League. Not the Conference League, they've gone one better than that. But allegedly, Moyes ripped the back out of the players in the dressing room for the state of the performance. Well, what miracle effect did that have yesterday? Absolutely zilch. And did he make changes? It was a nothing game for us. So why didn't Dibling start? Why didn't Asnou start? Give Mikalenko a rest. Why didn't George start? Why didn't Harrison Armstrong start? What did we have to lose? We weren't going anywhere, other than maybe down another position. You know, and then what was the other thing he said? He said, we, you know, Tottenham were up for it. Their crowd were up for it. They knew what they had to do. We've been in that situation. We know what that's all about. Well, if you know what it's all about, why can't you devise a game plan to counteract it? Surely the obvious thing is to get straight on the front foot, get an early goal and make them panic. Put the fear of God into them by going behind on their own ground. No. Let's just sit back and... You know, let's just sit back and lose possession and give them everything they want. Them first half possession stats were another embarrassment to Everton Football Club. And then he says, "And we got better second half, and you know we finished the game strongly. We finished the game strongly. One shot from Tyreek George that the goalie saved, and that was in added on time for crying out loud's sake." He's I'm sorry, he's. He's got to go. He's got to go. He is not going to take this club forward. We're going to piss about in the summer and we might make a couple of signings to replace the guys who are inevitably leaving. Like, well, obviously Seamus is going. Are we going to buy a right back? Are we going to play Nathan Patterson? Or are we going to stick with Jake O'Brien, who's probably loving the fact that he's playing every game and hating the fact that he's playing so far out of position? He's now beginning to look a liability.
Absolutely.
And everyone is realising it. Every other team is realising it.
Yep.
And that's nothing against Jake. He's doing his damnedest. But he's not in the right position.
He's only there because he's tall, Andy.
Yeah.
The only reason he's in the squad is because he's tall.
Yeah.
And that how
this manager cannot see what is wrong. You know, there's 50-odd thousand people at the Hill Dickinson. There's 3,000 upwards of Evertonians at every away game. Well, apart from the smaller grounds like Bournemouth, but you know what I'm saying. We sell out our allocation at every game. These fans that are travelling around the country and tip up at Hill Dickinson every week are not stupid. We can all see what is wrong. Why can't the manager, who's being paid a shitload of money to take us forward, see what everybody else can see? What is wrong with the man? What's wrong with him is he's playing 1950s football in the 2020s. And that's probably not fair on the players who played in 1950, because they were playing in hobnailed boots and balls that weighed four times the weight of the current ones and playing on mud pitches. Jesus wept. He's well past his sell-by date. Thank you, David. You saved us last season. What they should have done was said to him at the end of last season, "Great job, David. Cheers. Here's a nice bonus. Now piss off. We want someone who's going to take the club forward." But no, we've sat on our hands, and he looks bulletproof. And he gives the impression that he's bulletproof as well by just shrugging his shoulders. Well, nobody is bulletproof and nobody is indispensable. And the one who should be dispensed with is David Moyes.
And now hymn number 341. Oh God, our help in ages past.
Actually, can we do the collection first? Well, please pass around the plate.
Well, I mean, you say pass around the plate. By passing around the plate, you do a trawl of social media. And I spent a lot of last evening trawling round social media and the forums. And God's honest truth, I saw one posting on Twitter, one of the thousands that I went through, and I've been through the Grand Old Team Forum and a couple of others. I've seen one posting from someone who said, and he said it quite, I'm not sure whether he was saying it tongue in cheek, but he's posted, I'm in the giving one more season camp.
Didn't realize David was on Twitter, but you found him.
But what I'm saying is, you know, we all know there are thousands of people, thousands of Evertonians on social media and on the forums. And from what I saw last night, I must be mental. I probably spent about 2.5 hours trawling around last night, looking at stuff. And in all that time, God's honest truth, that was the only post that was remotely acquiescent to him. Everybody else was get him gone, get him out. And a growing number of posts about the CEO as well, with regards to being happily dissatisfied. Who the hell is happily dissatisfied, for crying out loud's sake?
That's shades of Mashiri and expected defeats.
Yeah. We've had enough of that crap for the last 20, 30 years or more.
Is any of this going to reach across the Atlantic to our owners, who presumably are the only people who have the power to do what the fan base would like to be done? The CEO can't sack Moyes, can he?
Well, in theory, you should be able to.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think that's a big question, George. And I think there is a question mark over the ownership and leadership of the club in terms of strategy and direction. They did the first part of their job, which was to stay, you know, we're going back to this word again, stabilize the club from a financial perspective, make sure that the stadium was secure, make sure that we weren't going to be in financial difficulties for a number of years going forwards. And they've done that. But they've done it for a reason. It wasn't an act of altruism in any sense. It was a calculated investment in an asset that they could acquire cheaply, and an asset that had huge potential. And that then comes to the second part of, well, if the asset's got huge potential, how do you make it, and you're only in it for financial reasons, which I think is the case, how do you make it more valuable than it is currently? Well, most income sources across football are maxed out. So it's unlikely that broadcast deals are going to get any higher than they are currently, not in the short term at least. commercial revenues, not going to get any higher. Everton are fleecing fans in terms of ticket prices, in terms of merchandising and premium seating, no differently from any other club, but that is the case. And of course the final bit, well, there's two final bits. One is performance related pay. Well, you know, dropping four places in the league in recent weeks, this cost us slightly more than £10 million, possibly as high as about 11.4 million pound, I think is the precise figure. And that's money that you never get back. And equally, the fact that somebody is now qualified for Europe at our expense means that, first of all, we don't get that income, but they do.
Yep.
So it's like the old, the classic three-pointer. One team gets the 3 points, the other team doesn't. And in the case of the teams that we mentioned earlier, they've all got now a greater financial advantage next year than
in
we
the transfer have. Market.
And they are now, if they weren't already, a much more attractive proposition for the type of mid-ranging but upwardly mobile players that clubs of our level can attract. So, and this is the bit that I don't quite understand, the consequences of creating the opportunity to get into European football. And it was it's been a quite peculiar league this season. It's a very flat league. If you look at, the number of points difference between, especially across the mid of the table, we're only talking really about sort of two, three, possibly four victories where we had defeats or draws to have made a significant difference to the outcome of the season. And when any business gets into that situation where it recognises that in a 38-game season, maybe four or five games are the difference between a successful season, in inverted commas, appreciate we wouldn't have won anything, and a not successful season, you'd pour everything that you had into ensuring that those four or five games had everything available to them, and we performed on the pitch like as if every one of those four or five games were our own cup finals. And that hasn't been the case. And I was struck yesterday by, I think it's always odd when you go to the last game, certainly the last away game of the season, and I've been lucky enough to go to a number in recent years. There's a bit of a party atmosphere beforehand because for many people, it's the final opportunity of the season to see their mates. They may not always live in the same area. They may not share much time together other than when they go to the football. So there's a little bit of a carnival atmosphere beforehand. I shared that video with you guys of what it was like in the concourse before the game. And you couldn't meet that. When I walked in yesterday, the hairs on the back of my neck were standing up. Excuse me, sorry. Because of the atmosphere that has been generated by fellow Blues that have gone to many more games than I've been to this season. They were there, they enjoyed themselves, obviously, and enjoy being with their mates. But they're there to watch Everton Football Club, and they're there to watch Everton Football Club play well, entertain, and finish as high up the league as we possibly can. and they were completely shortchanged yesterday. Completely shortchanged in every respect. The players are flatlining. I think they're out on their feet, which raises all sorts of questions about their selection, obviously, but also about their conditioning. And by almost all normal standards, you'd say that virtually all of the players are physically fit. But fitness, I think, is a comparative thing. You have to compare your fitness to whoever it is that you're playing at the end of the day. And I would argue strongly for the vast majority of the games at the beginning of the season, because we never enter a season quickly, and at the end of the season, our physical abilities are less than our opposition. And that then makes you point towards, well, obviously, recruitment is an issue because if you've got older players, then that's a natural extension of that. But then, how do they recover after games? What's the sports science behind the coaching and their training? What's the sports science behind their preparation? Are we doing the things that other clubs are doing? And are we doing them at least as well as other clubs are doing?
The one thing we're doing better than any other club is rinsing and repeating. The trouble is, we're rinsing and repeating rubbish.
Well, yeah, but then that's where the manager has to recognise this. That's when The CEO has to recognize this. That's when the board members have to recognize this, even if the owners don't. And they have to say to themselves, and if it needs investment from the owners, what we're currently doing isn't good enough to be competitive in this league. And by being competitive, I mean being not only being in the top half, I mean qualifying for European football, which shouldn't be the limit of our expectations, but realistically is. If nobody's asking those questions, and then nobody's forming a plan, and nobody's either using the resources that are available to them currently or asking for more resources from the owners, then I'm going to use the same expression. They're selling us short, and they're selling the club short. Because football has become a game of such tight margins that unless you're doing all of this and you're doing it all at least as well as everybody else, you're always going to fall short when it matters. And that's what, and that's where we've got. And if David Moyes can't see that for whatever reason, then, you know, he's not the right person for the job. And I think the difference between a David Moyes, you know, at the end of his career and some of the upcoming managers who are starting to develop reputations and stuff is that they've got clear ideas of how a modern football club should be run, and they're demonstrating their competitive advantages in their performances in terms of the team selections, in terms of the recruitment, in terms of their coaching, in terms of their tactics, in terms of their match management. And that's why Bournemouth are a much superior team than we are, for example, because they've got a manager and they've got a group of people running the club who understand what they need to do in order to be competitive with the resources that they've got. I don't think we've got that, and I don't think we've got it at any point within the organisation.
No, me neither.
Agreed. Complete agreement. You know, I mean, you know, we've mentioned Bournemouth there and Iriola, who's leaving Bournemouth. And apart from the fact he's a lot younger, and he's not a dour Scotsman. One thing about Iriola is whenever he's interviewed, he always has a smile on his face. He seems to enjoy his job. When was the last time you saw David Moyes smile? I don't think he might. You know, I'm sure he puts in his 8 hours a day. But he's not doing anything productive with it. I just look at the body language as well. His body language is shocking. For me, his body language is terrible most of the time. I'm beyond David Moyes now. The club has got to move on. There's got to be a change of direction. There's got to be a lot of change in a lot of directions. You've said it, Paul. You know, the Friedkins might have come in and stabilised us financially, but what direction are we going in? What are their aims? What do they want from this club? Their other club, Roma, have qualified for Europe. But we haven't. What would they have done had we qualified for Europe? Or is that why we've not qualified for Europe? Because it would have caused them a problem. You know, has Moyes been under orders from the Friedkins? Hang on a minute, we can't have both our clubs in Europe. You need to slow down a bit. Just miss out on Europe.
I genuinely doubt that's the case, Andy, because I know, in
all seriousness, I don't think that's the case either. But it does kind of beg a question, because it would have caused them a problem that they would have had to deal with.
Well, I'll go back to if the reason for investing in football, and it's not because they're football people, because Dan Friedkin doesn't I don't think he's in, well, I know he's not interested in football per se. He's not a football fan. The only reason for doing so is financial. And my argument to them, forget all the semantics about, you know, what do we want to be as a football club? What, how do we want our fans to feel about us? If your only reason for investing in anything, doesn't have to be football, can be anything else, is financial, you have to improve the performance of your company relative to your competition. And it is as simple, business is as simple as that. If you want to grow your business, then you grow your business at the expense of the competition, and you do so by being better than they are in whatever you do. And it doesn't matter what you do. That's a simple, you know, if somebody was ever to ask me what's one simple, you know, line of advice, be better than your competition, find something that you can be better at. And that's the challenge that the Freakins have got to address. Do they believe that we can be better than them? Similarly financed clubs? And if so, can we be better with what we've got? Well, the answer to that is quite clearly no. And therefore, what changes do we need to make us better than the clubs that we are now competing with? When we first started this podcast 10 years ago, I still used to refer to our peers as being, you know, the Big Six.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're referring to our peers as being the Middle Six. That doesn't present the case for development. And I know we've gone through like ridiculously difficult situations, but those situations are behind us now. And this season was, surely this season was more than just about stabilizing the club. This was an opportunity. And you know that old expression about first impressions count? Well, this is the first full season that the Freakins had in charge of our club. If I was sitting on their board, I would be saying, what an incredible opportunity we've missed here. Can't do anything about it now because the opportunity's gone. But what do we need to do to make sure that the opportunity next year is achieved? And if the answer to that, if they all look around at each other and say, well, we just carry on as normal, as usual, same manager, same similar team, one or two additions here and there, then they're doing themselves, and more importantly, they're doing us a massive disservice.
Yeah.
George, you're unusually quiet.
I'm listening, mate. I'm listening.
What's your view on matters?
Pretty much what you've just said, really. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't want to get into bad-mouthing David Moyes, but I'm bored stiff with watching his teams play football, and I want a change in that area. I don't know enough about the CEO to know whether what effect replacing him would have, and I wouldn't know who to replace him with either. I have loads of thoughts about the playing staff, but that has to be the province of the man who's going to, of the people who are going to train them. The other day I watched Bournemouth and City. Now that was a very, very high stakes game for both teams, but the pace at which it was played is not a pace that Everton have even hit for 10 minutes all season. And that's very worrying too. So, you know, I totally buy the argument that the change is root and branch. And I'm depressed because, you know, what we're saying is our owners are miles away and not listening and don't know anything about football and don't really care about football. So I really don't know where to go from here. You know, I've no idea what to suggest, really. Not a clue. As to you know, I share all the frustration. I sent you that link last night of that guy who I'd never seen before sitting in his front room going, "It's just a joke, it's just a joke, it's just a joke." And I agreed with almost every word he said. Fine. You know, it's good to get your frustration out, and it's good for me to get my frustration out as well as everybody else. But it's going to get replaced by new frustration because I don't believe anything's going to happen. And that puts us in a very static, apathetic state of mind, which I don't like and relish or look forward to at all. I mean, like a lot of Evertonians, I think I'm really glad this season is over. And I'm sure Andy's right about what social media, and therefore, you know, as large as we can, the fan base is thinking about the manager. But I also agree with Andy that he gives the impression, and so he should from his point of view, of being bulletproof. He's going nowhere, and so neither are we. And from that point of view, I don't know what to say. You know, I don't have a channel to the Friedkins. I don't have a channel to anybody, and like most fans, so that's what I feel about it, you know.
One of the subtle differences yesterday in terms of his post-match reaction was the goal that we conceded was a ridiculous goal that we again from a corner. But we had in the first half, Tottenham had three or four chances at the back post, which they probably should have converted one at least.
The big centre half should have scored twice, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't. Moyes didn't seem angry about it, and he earlier in the season, he would have been angrier about it, and he
He's
would
not.
have.
He does
Sorry.
look tired to you. He looked relieved it was all over to me.
Yeah, I mean, the jet engines were warming up on the runway. He was off. And then, I know people who know David Moyes really well, and they say that his work ethic and his commitment to the job and his desire is no different now than it ever has been in his career, and that defeat hurts him as much as it ever did
I
do.
don't believe anybody's doubting that, Paul.
But then you've got to ask yourself, why? If you have a problem in your life, there's two ways of addressing it. You can live with it, i.e., not address it, and be bloody miserable what's the word I'm looking for? You can be miserable because of the problem, and it's not a problem that you're prepared to address, or that you do something about it, and you address it. And you enjoy the challenge of addressing it, and you get satisfaction of overcoming the challenge, overcoming the problem, which leads you hopefully to and your organization to a better place. Surely Moyes has got that level of ambition and pragmatism to want to be doing that. Than what he's currently doing, which just seems to be resignation and acceptance. That's not a Moyes characteristic, I don't think. And maybe it is that he's 63 and he's exhausted, and he doesn't believe that he's going to get the backing that he thinks he needs, or he doesn't.
I think that's the crucial point, Paul. When he stood on the pitch at Goodison at the end of the season, where he, you know, he could rightly say, "I saved the team from the mess that Dyche had left us in," the team. He said, and he hoped that the owners understood what was needed now. I think he understands that the owners don't give a rat's ass about what's needed now financially. They're not going to give us the money for him to buy his way out of trouble. And he's not the man to coach his way out of trouble.
No.
No, that's absolutely the case. Yeah. So the question then for him is whether or not he continues to do something that he obviously still loves the club. but he's going to be bloody miserable doing it because he's not going to get the resources that he needs, as he sees it, to do the job, or whether the club actually turns around and says, David, thank you very much, but actually we need to go in a different direction, because it's not only about resources here, it's about the whole philosophy of being a modern football club. And that's what I would love.
Who is there to say that, Paul?
Well, I would love either the CEO, or I would more so, I would actually love Dan Friedkin and any one of his board members to come out. And if it's Dan Friedkin, to come out and say, look, guys, I don't know anything really about football, but I do know a bit about business because I've built a successful business. And sometimes you have to put your hand up and say, the opposition, the competition has stolen a march on us. And if we continue to operate in the manner in which we're operating in, then we're not going to be even as competitive as we are now. And therefore, I'm entrusting the club to people who know how to run a modern football club. And that means a complete reworking of the whole infrastructure. It goes back to, modern football management, which is not just a single manager. It's, a group of coaches, set piece coaches, defensive coaches, conditioning coaches, a director of football, a director of recruitment, somebody who's looking after, somebody who's really top-notch looking after the academy, so that they know in 5 years' time, there's three or four lads coming through, two might get become regular players in the first team, and the other three are going to get sold on at a, with a nice juicy profit, which we can then either reinvest into the academy, or we can reinvest into the first team squad. That's what modern football is about, and if you've got everybody who's responsible for running Everton Football Club into a room, and you ask people to you called out the individual responsibilities, you'd have to define them, and in a sense that's what I'm doing now, and you called out the individuals, and you said the person that's responsible for academy recruitment, can they step forward? Please tell me your strengths and weaknesses. Tell me what we're so good at that means somebody comes to us rather than goes to Manchester City or goes to Brentford or goes to Crystal Palace or, whichever club it is. And there's got to be that clear mentality that every aspect of running a modern football club, like every aspect of running a successful business, is a competitive environment. And if you're an accountant, you have to be the best accountant in the world. If you're in the press department, you have to have the best PR in the world. If you're the person answering the phone for a general inquiry, you have to be the best person in the world in order to have, from my perspective, in order to have a successful, growing and massively competitive business, particularly in a performance-related industry like professional football. And I think if you went round the table, if you went round the room, if you went round the whole number of people who live at Everton Football Club, there wouldn't be that many people who could genuinely, hand on heart, say, well, actually, I'm probably in the top two or three in the country, or I'm in the top two or three in Europe in my field of expertise. And that's where we need to get to.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more.
And I'm not picking on any individuals.
You started all that by saying this is what you would like the Friedkins to do. As far as I can see, the only action the Friedkins have taken is to award Moyes a new contract.
Well, he's got one year left, hasn't he?
Yeah, he got a 2.5 year contract when he first came.
Yeah,
of which there's 1 year left. And no doubt there will be negotiations over the summer as to, I believe, that Moyes is obviously now looking for an extension. But again, if he's looking for an extension, wouldn't his hand be much so much stronger had we qualified for Europe?
Absolutely.
So again, you know, from a motivational point of view, everything was on offer over the last few weeks, and we declined those offers by our own performance. And that's, for me, and I know I'm talking about football here in very non-footballing terms, but for me, that's the quandary. There are many things that keep me awake at night, but that's one of the things that keeps me awake at night about Everton football. Why can't people see what is the obvious?
I wish to go back one to what Andy said. I'm not going to join in the conspiracy theory, and I don't think Andy was suggesting a conspiracy theory, except, you know, as a joke. But what is the actual situation if Roma are in Europe and we change manager, and the manager is clearly taking us into the top six of the Premier League and into Europe? What is the situation there, given the ownership of the clubs is the same people?
Okay, I mean, it's certainly the case that there are clubs operating in European competitions that have got common owners. And it used to be the case that Nottingham Forest did this, Crystal Palace tried to do it, but did it too late for reasons not known, whereby the owner could place his or her shares into what's called a blind trust, which basically means that they own Nottingham Forest, but they don't have any, for the period that they're in the European competition, they don't have any control over it. It's looked after by independent trustees. And that was originally accepted by UEFA as a suitable solution to the problem of having one owner, two clubs, same competition. They've changed their mind on that. Excuse me, I'm going to have to put myself on silent for a second because I'm going to cough. They changed their mind on that, and they said that's no longer we're no longer going to accept that. Several clubs, of which I believe Everton was one, have taken the view that if there is what they call an operational firewall between the two clubs, so there's absolutely no evidence that even though a club is owned by the same individual or the same investor, if there's no connection between the clubs operationally, i.e. they don't share data, they don't share information about tactics, they don't share information about player recruitment, etc., 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 that satisfies the UEFA rules. And I think that's the route that Everton would have gone down, and it's certainly the route that other clubs are now going down. They're saying to UEFA, look, we own two, yeah, we accept that we own two clubs, but actually those two clubs don't talk to each other. There's a separation between the two. Well, they call it like a fire, they call it a firewall. There's a firewall between the two. And that seems to be the viable solution.
Right.
We decided on a different solution, which was not to qualify.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that. You know, but
no, I know. No, it was me being sarcastic. Sorry.
The drop off was alarming, and the drop off came. Oh, I don't want to talk about that. I just don't know where. I mean, I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. I just don't know where, how any of this is going to get affected. And I fear that, you know, if we leave this now and pick it up again in late July, we'll have shipped out a few people and brought in a few people. And the manager will be in place, and the coaching staff will be in place, and the academy will be the same, and we're in for another season of it.
Well, unless something changes, then yeah, that's going to be the case. The question that none of us can answer is who's going to make those changes?
Yeah, is there an AGM, Paul?
No. I mean, Everton is 99.7% owned by around Ice Capital, which is majority owned by the Friedkins. It's a private company. There's no legal requirement to have an AGM. So there's no formal methodology for shareholders, let alone fans, to question the board or question the owners. They're completely insulated and isolated.
That's not really healthy, is it?
It wouldn't be a problem if we were achieving stuff on the pitch.
No, exactly, but they can't be held accountable then, can they? So, I don't know,
Yeah, but ask yourself the question, who did the Friedkins and indeed any of the other of these types of owners, who do they believe they're accountable to?
Well, only themselves.
Yeah,
that's it.
They're only accountable to themselves. They don't, I mean, as we've said dozens of times on this podcast, and probably lots of other people on all the podcasts have said it, the fans are something of an inconvenience, really. You know, we just happen to tip up every week and pay us hard-earned money. But we've not got a voice. The only voice we've got is protest. And whether anybody would listen to protests or not, God only knows. I mean, we've had protests at Goodison over the previous board and ownership. I mean, the word of the season is frustration, isn't it? Frustration. Just maddening.
Just on the fan point, Andy.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that the Friedkins have to be aware of, is that the independent football regulator and the new regulations surrounding football mean that fans actually do or should have a much more meaningful voice in certain aspects of running the club. And one of those is fan engagement.
Right.
And I think one of the duties of the people who are currently part of the various fan organisations that sit in and around the club, the fan advisory board, I can't remember what the other one's called.
Fans Forum.
Fans Forum. They have to be pulling up this legislation and saying to the Everton board and to the Everton owners, actually, guys, you've got to step up a bit here because you're now legally responsible to do so. You've got an obligation to do so. And I think that's the sort of, that's the stick. I would argue that the carrot approach is probably better in the sense that yeah, there's all sorts of different ways about valuing a football club. And I'll go back to, what are the Friedkins in this for? Well, they've bought an asset cheaply and they'll sell it at some point in the future for more than they acquired it for. One of the areas that are involved or part of the valuation of the football club is a football club's brand value. And if you don't have engagement with the fans, if you don't have, if you don't identify with the fans, then surely that destroys your brand value.
Do they care about that?
Well, I would argue, this is why I'm saying this is the carrot approach. I would argue that that's the presentation that you make to the owners, that look, there is huge commercial value in you having and being recognized as having the most engaged management team with the most engaged fans. And yes, there will be challenges along the way because the fans and the owners and the management of the club are not always going to agree on things. But the very fact that we can have those adult conversations sitting around the table adds value to the club and again, I, you know, sorry, this is, I don't want to make this sound like some form of business lecture. I think you have to you have to build all of these things into something that you're going to sell in the future, so that when a prospective owner comes along, you have all the heavy conversations about profitability, about what's on the balance sheet, debt, etc., 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 and then you throw in some of the sort of slightly softer but nice things about the club. And one of it might be that our relationship with our fans is really good, and that we have great brand value, much of which is driven by that relationship. And you know, I wrote about it a couple of days ago. Everton's brand value is around £240 million using industry standards to calculate it. And that's like almost one tenth of like Liverpool or Manchester United. Now, I'm not saying that the relationship between the club and the fans is the sole reason for that, but surely that has to form part of the equation.
Well, it's interesting you talk about that at a point where Andy started this podcast by saying that the fan base has never been more solid in its anger.
It appears that way, put it like that. You know, I mean, I have to qualify. That was, you know, a couple of hours on social media is probably doesn't represent 52,000 people at Hill Dickinson.
There weren't 52,000 people at Hill Dickinson when the Sunderland match ended, Andy.
Well,
they walked out.
Yeah, in the absence of, the absence of, other than, like I said, just the one post I saw that said I'm in the giving one more season camp. In the absence of anything else, then what can't speak can't lie. The unanimous majority of people posting on social media last night and again this morning is the manager has to be changed.
Well, it's just interesting in the light of what you were saying, Paul, about, you know, the turning the energy of the fans into some sort of worth and some sort of carrot is the word you were using. It's just curious it should come at this moment when it's, you know, when the fan base is unhappy.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm stating the obvious, but any owner looking at the away end yesterday must recognise that the potential that this club has, you know, for us, virtually a meaningless fixture because we were not likely to qualify for Europe, whatever the results were. Yet 3,000 people turn up on a bank holiday weekend when, you know, transport arrangements are awful, beautiful weather, and frankly, almost everybody could have been doing better things with their time than watching Everton. Yet 3,000 people turned up, all in a great spirit before the game. And that spirit very quickly dissipated as the game. I mean, it didn't help by the fact we were all in baking sun, but that spirit dissipated very quickly. Why? Because there was nothing on the pitch to warrant investment in future enthusiasm for the next hour and a half. And you know, at the end of the game, I believe David Moyes didn't even come over, and which is unlike him. He didn't come over and applaud the fans, but their way end was half empty before the final whistle went, and understandably so, because you know, it was a slightly later kickoff and transport, etc., and people were probably desperate for a drink. But if you can't see the potential in that and say, actually, what do we need to do to, you know, make this club so much better than it is? You know, talked earlier about, you know, what the types of questions that you would ask. Question one, how do you make this club so much better than it currently is?
Well, they've got to start winning.
Okay, but how?
Well, got to play a better brand of football for a kickoff because it's boring and tedious.
Right, how?
And it's predictable. So we have to change. We have to change. We have to change. We have to change the whole philosophy of the club, really. We have to be better at everything. Absolutely everything. And you mentioned, you know, you talked about structure, Paul, you know, a director of football, better coaching staff in with specific responsibilities, be it corners, throwing, defending, set pieces, whatever. You know, the whole structure needs a complete rebuild. Everything. And as you said, if we've not got the best telephone receptionist, go out and get a different one. You know, if the tea lady's making horrible tea, get a new tea lady. If the PR people aren't up to scratch, then get people who are. Get people in who are better in the jobs than the incumbents. And I'm sorry, but, you know, if somebody's not up to the task, they've got to go. And that's true of the tea lady and the manager.
Yes, but you have to have someone at the top, well, Andy, who's setting that agenda.
Yeah, and going, well, that has to come right from the very top, surely.
Well,
I mean,
something taken out of this whole podcast and this whole season is that the people at the top of this club are not listening to anything that's being said to them.
Well, I would put it to them that, you know, Paul will correct me if I'm wrong, but the Friedkins, by and large, made their fortune on the back of the Toyota franchise and becoming arguably the biggest Toyota distributor in the US, or one of the biggest Toyota distributors in the US. Yeah. What are they going to do if Toyota suddenly pulled out of the US and they have to find another franchise to go with? Then they'd have to make some decisions, wouldn't they? Well, David Moyes is our Toyota. Take David Moyes out of the club, what are they going to do? They've got to find somebody else. I'm maybe going off a bit weird tangent here, but they're not stupid business people. That's obvious. They've made a fortune out of whatever they've done. But they have to accept and come to the realisation sooner rather than later, please, that what we're doing in football, or what we're doing with Everton in the Premier League in England, isn't working. And they have got experience of football by the fact that they own Roma. So, you know, they must have learned from mistakes and experience in Italy. It might be a different league, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but it's football. And if they've had bad managers at Roma, have they made the changes? If they've had bad leadership in the boardroom at Roma, have they made the changes? They can't just sit on their hands and say, well, we've stabilised things and the club's financially sound and sooner or later it'll be worth more and then we'll sell up and bug it off. That's...
Well, unfortunately, Andy, they can. I mean, I wish it wasn't so, but, you know, just to be a pedant, they can. That seems to me to be what they're doing.
Well,
you know, I've texted almost everybody in my, you know, that I've got an email or an address for the other day to say, you've got to see this film. It's called The Triangle of Sadness. It was produced by the Friedkins. It's one of the best films I've ever seen. They're putting money into very classy projects. The only other person I know that they put money into is Martin Scorsese. This is people of taste in my sphere of work.
Mm-hmm.
This is about as high as it gets. This is very, very tasty people going, yeah, I'll put some money into that. So I don't understand. I mean, you know, when are they having a board meeting? They've got to look at the state of what's happened at Everton and go, well, nothing's happened. That's where we were last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question that one presumes is, well, do we want to do anything about it?
Well, the question should be, what are we going to do about it? Not should we?
Well, that seems to me to be the sum total of what we're talking about, Andy, is that I'm wondering whether they ask the question, are we going to do anything about it? Or should we just leave it for another year and then flog it on? You know, I don't know. I mean, I just wish I could find something to lift the despair, but I can't. I can't. And I don't believe Moyes is going to get, I think he'll just sit on it, you know, go and have a rest and everything and come back and, you know.
Rinse and repeat.
Absolutely.
Okay, gents, I'm going to call quite. Time. Enough depression for the day.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I wish I could finish on a lighter note.
Exactly.
Not sure.
The weather's good.
The cricket's starting soon. I'm hoping Tyler Diblin will be moved on. Poor lad, he looked traumatised. 19 years of age, nobody talking to him. Fucking ridiculous.
On an entirely personal level, the only good thing, the good thing about yesterday was meeting friends. The second best thing was some guy, random guy, walked up to me and he said, "Are you the Esk?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Thank you very much for everything you did in getting rid of Mr. Kenwright from the club." And I said, "George, I didn't realise you were coming to the game. How are you?"
No, you've met me before.
Yeah. Anyway, James, thanks so much. Thanks so much for everything that you've done this season. I think we should do a sort of, a virtual lap around the pitch.
Virtual lap around the recording studio.
Yeah, applauding all those people who are still listening to us. Most of them have already gone.
Oh, God in heaven.
And just to say that there's unlikely to be any transfer activity at Talking the Blues over the summer. So, and we will continue, obviously, over the summer to do the podcast. But the starting three will be the same come the first game of the season. Even if we're all getting a bit older and we're getting a bit slower and we're getting a bit more forgetful. Life in these three old dogs yet.
We'll do our best.
We'll do our best. Guys, thank you so much.
Pleasure, Paul.
Thank you to everybody for listening as well.
Yeah, much appreciated.